Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Yucca.
And I'm Mark.
And this week, we are returning to the topic of self-care and community care. So the first thing is, well, why now? Why are we talking about this? Because we've talked about it again, but we really, really want to come back to this concept because it's so critical.
Yes, and especially in this time. It's become a cliche how bad 2020 has been, because it just piles emergency after emergency on us. And the stress level, I think most of us aren't even aware of the background stress levels that we're now just living with habitually, through the pandemic and through what's happening in politics. And where I am, there were all these wildfires and people have had floods, and there are just all kinds of terrible things that have happened. So we're coming up to the holidays and we've just had the elections. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really sorted out how the elections are going to play out, because it's starting to look like it's going to take an arrangement of fireplace tools to get that guy out of the White House. So all of that is really stress-inducing. It creates anxiety, right? And so mm-hmm. we felt that this week would be a good time to revisit self-help techniques, household help techniques, and community help techniques that can help you to feel better about the circumstances that you're in.
Mm-hmm. And not just in a way of covering up the bad feelings or something like that, but really being in a better space. So I think that even if you're listening to this in the future and 2020 is a distant memory, that this is still going to be applicable whenever.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. Yes. If you don't want to actually self-care, if you just want to sort of paper over all the anxiety and stress, that's what drinking is for. So, you know, keep that in mind if that really is the direction you want to go. But we don't recommend it.
Certainly not.
we recommend that instead you actually confront head on the stress and anxiety that you're living with, and then do something practical to help reduce it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's go through those different groups. I mean, I guess one could say the easiest place to start, or the place that we have the most personal power, is with the individual.
Yes.
So with ourselves. And of course, that'll have ripple effects to everyone that we are connected to.
Absolutely. And I'd like to put in a caveat that I don't claim that I'm real good at doing all of the things that we're going to talk about here today. I know that I should do them. Some of them I don't do so much.
Mm-hmm.
So just bear that in mind. You know, this no one in this podcast is shaking a finger at you and finding fault that you're not doing all the things that we're going to be talking about. But if you pick one or two, they will help you. They will help you enjoy your life more.
Yeah. And you know, that I think that's important to bring up, that none of us are perfect at it, and at different points in our life too. So, you know, for me, I know that I need, that if I was to meditate every single day, that it really, really helps me. And sometimes I do that, and sometimes I fall off that wagon, and it's helpful to remember and get back on and get back up there. But I'm not perfect, and nobody's perfect, and it's okay to not be perfect.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. The idea of the idea of a practice as something like a plate of glass, which once it's broken, it's permanently ruined, is really not the model we want to use in approaching our spiritual and our self-care practices. Instead, it's more like riding a horse. And if you get thrown off the horse, well, you get back on the horse. And if you get thrown off again, well, or if you step off again because you're distracted by other things, the horse is still there and you can go back and you can get back on the horse. It's much more of a forgiving and tolerant kind of approach to doing these things. So let's talk about what some of them are. You mentioned meditation. Mm-hmm. I am an ADHD kid and I am terrible at meditation. I do real well with observing my thoughts. Oh, look, there went a thought. Oh, yes, that was another thought too. But in terms of drilling down to actually focus on my breath and try to calm all that chatter down, it's very, very difficult for me. So, so what I do instead is I do ritual. I light candles and get myself into that trancey, ritualized focus space and find some symbols that I can concentrate on that feel good and that empower me. And I go in that direction, which is its own meditative sort of thing. It's just got a lot more content loaded into it than simple
breath work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of different forms of meditation that some forms, like you're saying, that doesn't work for you. We've talked about it on this podcast, actually. We've talked about guided meditations, mm-hmm. and there can be, you can get into your transcendental meditation style or just simple listening to your breath or mindfulness. But sometimes that meditation can also be a sort of loaded emotional topic that has a lot of feelings around it. And if that name doesn't work, like for some people, they have a very strong association with it. And if the name doesn't work, don't worry about calling it meditation or feeling like it has to be, you're not doing it right, right? It's not meditation unless you have your mantra that was given to you by so-and-so or something like that.
And sit in an excruciating position, perfectly still.
Yes. I usually lay down flat on my back for that or stand up because I can't get myself to sit in the position or just, to sit in a way that I feel like I can breathe and not be just concentrating on my posture the whole time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I have the same thing. And there have been times when I have done some meditative techniques and they have gone directly into sleep, which is not a bad thing. That is really not a bad thing. If you can relax enough that you can get a nap in, that's good for
body
you.
Body probably needed it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it did kind of hijack my original intention, which was sort of centering and becoming more self-aware and aware of the state of my body and all those kinds of things. So meditation is certainly one. And as you say, there's a lot of different ways to do meditation. You can do guided meditations. And we've mentioned Yucca has a channel of guided meditations that we'll put in the notes. Mm-hmm. And there are many others on YouTube and other places where you can, and Audible, where you can listen to guided meditations that take you to places and let you have an internal experience. And the other thing that reminds me of is walking meditations, which match up pretty well with hikes in nature to me. When I'm hiking in nature, I'm silent. I can feel my breath, so I'm very aware of my breath, mostly because I'm out of shape. I'm hyper aware of my surroundings, and my eyes sort of drink in all of the cues from the natural world, my eyes and my nose and my ears, take in all of these beautiful cues that help lower blood pressure, create more calm, create more of a sense of space and possibility within mm-hmm. us. So getting out into nature is something I highly, highly recommend.
Yeah. And wonderful if you can go out to a trail or out into farther away from the urban environment. But nature could also be your front yard or your backyard or the little
balcony
or whatever it is. But outside, getting outside, I think is really, really important.
Yes. Breathe some better air. Feel the sun on your skin. Mm-hmm. At this time of year, it's often an opportunity to feel rain or snow on your skin, which is also a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to sit there until you're absolutely drenched and freezing to death, but the rains have only just started to arrive where I am. We had our first real rainstorm on Friday the 13th. Mm. And I spent a good long time out in it getting wet.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
Well, this brings us to a practice which I mention a lot, and it sounds so, so simple, but it has made a profound difference in my life and in the lives of the people that I take care of, and that's our sun time and star time. And sometimes that's all we get in the day in terms of getting outdoors. It's better when we can get more, but preferably in the morning, we go out and just for a few minutes are outside. And with the kids, we've been holding hands and turning our faces to the sun and learning about how you can't really look at the sun. You have to close your eyes when you look in that direction and whatnot. But just saying hello to the day, mm-hmm. getting some sun, and that has some really important physical impacts in terms of your circadian rhythm, that signal to your body, because when we're inside, even in our brightly lit artificial setting, we are not getting as much light as we do outside. Just
right.
The numbers just are literally order of magnitude different in terms of how much the lux that you're getting. So getting out for just a few moments of sun time, and then the same with the night, just getting outside. You can't see the moon every night because it's up during the day for half of the month, but the half that it is, looking for the moon, or right now you can see Jupiter, Saturn, Mars for much of the night going out. Even if you're in a really urban environment with a lot of light pollution, those are still going to be bright enough in most cases just to go and look for them for a moment. And it doesn't have to be long. It can be short enough that you don't really have to get all the way dressed up and all of that. Just mm-hmm. get your bathrobe and maybe your rain boots and you'll be okay. but sun time, star time, I think just makes a profound difference.
I find that the time I spend relating with the sky generally, it keeps me connected in a deep way. It reminds me that I'm part of this larger system of unfolding. And that's a very good feeling. It's a pleasurable feeling. And it's also a great contextualizer. When there's crisis, I realize the crisis is not that big. How, you know, the Mars is going to continue on its path around the sun in exactly the same way, no matter what happens in the crisis that I'm currently contemplating.
Yep.
So it helps me to reduce my level of stress and anxiety about those things.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I was talking about ritual, and many of our listeners and members of the non-theist pagan community have daily practices that they do, various different sorts of ritual practices, and they may just be as simple as sun time and star time. They may be, you know, very little in the way of symbolic behavior, just very practical sort of here we are on planet Earth kinds of practices. But they can also be symbolic behaviors. I have a focus or altar, and every day I draw a tarot card from the Wildwood deck, because I don't really like the traditional conservative sort of Christian symbol tarot deck that is most common. And I understand that that's a completely random draw. It's not fortune telling, but it's a rich symbol set. And when I contemplate that card, it becomes a lens that I can look at the day through. You know, whether it's about cooperation, or it's about adversity, or it's about patience, or it's about redemption, or it's about ancestors or protection. The cards are beautifully illustrated, and they have lots of little interesting details, and their meanings become meaningful to me. I sail out into the world on my day having been informed by something at a metaphorical and imaginative level. And I find that that helps me. It helps me to be happier.
Mm. Yeah. You've also mentioned the lighting candles before.
Yes. In the evenings. Mm-hmm. There are, and I've talked about this before, there are two sections to my focus. There's an underworld, which is where the photos of my dead beloved and skulls and bones and other sorts of and ancestor figures, cave paintings, sort of underworldly stuff. That's mm-hmm. where that lives. It's where my mummified bat lives. Isn't that cool? I have a mummified bat.
That's cool.
I'm a bona fide witchy person. I have a mummified bat. In fact, it's hanging from a tiny thread so that it looks like it's in flight over this shelf. Anyway, so there's a candle on there, and I light that every evening saying the honored dead as I light it. And then the upper world part of the focus is full of symbols and colors and things that I love and things that inspire me and symbols of things that I want to remember or places that I've been or, you know, just the big, wide, wonderful world. And I light the candle on that section of the focus and I say the sacred earth. And I do that every night. I mean, I miss once in a while because nobody is 100%, but almost every night I do that. And having those candles burning there feels like the maintenance of a tradition that instills comfort in me somehow. I'm not even entirely sure how to describe the emotion that it builds in me, but it's an ongoing tradition, and that tradition, it brings me comfort. Yeah. Mm. How about you, Yucca? Are there things that you do during the day that reduce your blood pressure?
I have moments throughout the day, and locations in my house where I have sort of many focuses or many altars, which is actually in the bathroom, because that's one of the few places where I sometimes get to be alone for a moment. And in the kitchen where the kettle is, where, you know, we heat up our water for the coffee. And so moments like that, that are touchstones, and then the star time and the sun time are really the times that I set some intention and return and ground. And that really helps with the cycle of the day, which then feeds into the cycle of the season and the year. Mm-hmm. And those are the daily maintenance. But sometimes things get a little tougher. Sometimes things get where I really need to take a special moment to step aside and then do a little bit of extra for me. And for me, that's often going and sitting and being outdoors, or we were speaking earlier before just kind of chatting about what we'd done in the past few weeks. And I had said that we had gone and disconnected the internet and disconnected from the world and just did some sitting around a little fire for just a couple of days and made that our thing. I'm at a stage in my life where I don't get to do much alone time because I've got young children, and young children need constant attention and supervision. And
sure.
But sometimes it does, even as a busy parent of young people, sometimes I just need to step aside and have a personal ritual or breathing moment or connection moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that especially this year has been one where my partner and I, we've been literally scheduling, okay, you know, putting it in the shared Google calendar of this is so-and-so's time to just get away for a few minutes.
Uh-huh. That's so great. That's yeah. great. It's good that you and your partner are really on the same page about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, as we talk about these things, the common thread is take the time. The worst thing you can do from a self-care standpoint is decide to power through mm-hmm. and just ignore whatever symptoms you're having, whatever stresses you're feeling, whatever emotions are coming up, and just
yeah,
just make your way through it like a rhinoceros. It's not good for you. It's like literally is not good for your life expectancy. Those kinds of approaches are not what makes for a person that's going to live a long life. And honestly, not as happy a life either.
Yeah.
It is so much healthier to, you know, take 5 minutes to go into a linen closet and scream because you just can't stand it anymore and then come out and go about your day. Than it is to not do something like that.
We have a picture of an airplane airbag printed out and put on our refrigerator. When you ride on a plane, they always tell you if the pressure drops and the airbags come out, well, put your own mask on before helping anyone in the seat with you. Because if you pass out, there's nothing you can do to help those other people.
Right.
Right. You've got to put your own mask on first.
Self-care is the first step of care of anyone. And unfortunately, we have lots of modeling and storytelling in our culture that's all about the heroism of self-sacrifice in order to serve others. And this isn't just about, you know, people that decided, you know, that stood aside and didn't get in a lifeboat on a sinking ship. It's also people that are kind of workaholics and drive themselves forward in order to provide for their families. And it's about people that don't take that time mm-hmm. to put on their own oxygen mask first. Everyone around you will thank you for having done your self-care. You may not think so, but trust me, their experience of you is going to be a whole lot better if you do your self-care than if you don't.
Yeah.
So having talked about this at the self level, and I mean, there are so many things that you can do, but you know, getting out into nature, getting out into the sun, getting out under the stars, doing your meditation or in your spiritual practice.
Some feel-good music.
Yep. Singing along in the car. Singing is great for you. Makes you feel really good. Singing is a great activity, and it doesn't matter whether you think you can sing or not. Do it in the car where there's nobody else and you don't have to worry about what they think. Or if you have little kids, they love to sing. So you know, have them join in.
Dance party.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on a Zoom call with Sasha Sagan, Carl Sagan and Andrean's daughter today, with the Seattle Atheist Church. And I asked a question about the resacralization of the world and the way that we discount awe and amazement as sort of trivial, unimportant. And she was saying, yeah, you know, it's like I've got a 3-year-old right now. And when she sees the moon, she's just like, the moon. And so they have like a 5-minute dance party for the moon, right?
Yeah.
Because the moon is awesome.
Moon. Yeah.
The moon. There's this big thing up there and it does these things. And we've actually gone there and there's just so much to love about the moon. So, you know, getting more of that into your life, sacrificing dignity where necessary in order to live more deeply and enjoy more. All of those things can really, really help you in times like these.
Yeah.
And then I have to put in a word also for the news diet. So much of what we are hearing right now is very dispiriting. There isn't much that we can do about it except at our own personal levels. I mean, if you're keeping yourself and others around you safe from COVID-19, then maybe you don't need to know how many Americans have died this week.
Yeah.
So regulating your information intake is another really important self-care step that you can do.
Yeah. And even beyond that, not just with the information and the news, but just the screens in general, because they, on one level, can connect us in some very meaningful ways, but they can also consume our attention and our awareness. And where our attention is really what determines how we experience and what the world feels like, what our experience of the world is. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that practicing of stepping back and maybe having a time that you turn off the phone for, having a time that you turn the router off for, or even, I mean, this sounds like a radical idea, but having a day, right? Having one day of the week that you are disconnected from all of that can be really powerful in a lot of ways.
Indeed.
So, yeah.
Indeed. I think we've become so accustomed in the past 20 years or so to the screens just elbowing out everything else from our lives. And there's a lot about the way we used to live before the screens that I miss. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that I don't.
Sure. There's a lot of great things about the screen. Yeah, what we're doing right now. This is fantastic.
It is. I mean, you and I have never met, but
yeah,
we do this every week.
Well, I mean, we have, though. We haven't met in, I mean, we've never like physically been in the same room, but this screen has allowed us to form a friendship and a connection that I think wouldn't be as deep as it is if it was just voice that we were doing.
I agree.
Right? If we were just talking on the phone and didn't get to see. So not that voice can't be, I mean, voice is very powerful, but also the screen does allow for that whole extra layer of communication that humans have. We're social animals. This is
Visual animals.
Yes.
Very, very visual animals.
Down to the root of who we are and our other senses. And that I think we were going to talk next about the household care.
Yes.
Right. So yes. Whatever your household is, whether that's a nuclear family that you live with or a partner or yourself and your cats or whoever that is.
Mm-hmm. So did you want to go into some of the things that you do to kind of enhance the well-being of your household then?
Sure. Yeah. So, and this is specific to my particular household and the needs of the people in my household, which is going to be different for other people. I have, so my husband and me, and then our two children who are 4 and 2. So that's mm-hmm. a very different need than your 14 and 18 year old or something like that. But creating for that age, and actually I think it's really important for adults to having a structure that's a reliable structure that we're not super rigid about it, but every morning we make a point of being together and sitting and eating something or drinking something. I don't really eat in the morning, but, you know, hang out with them and go outside for our sun time. And trying to remind each other and build into the day times that we can practice self-care. I do things like putting nice smells in the house and little surprises and fun things for the family. But one of the things on the adult-to-adult, and we really try and practice it with the kids too, is one, giving each other a little grace, but trying to be aware of what we're putting out into the space.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm in a really nasty mood, that mood spreads immediately to everyone in the room with me. And sometimes removing myself from the room is something that really can be, even though I love these people deeply and I want to be around them, I need to go and take care of that. And sometimes, you know, this is not my proudest moment as a parent, but sometimes that is, here, kids, watch some of your number blocks or whatever it is that you're going to watch on the screen. And I'm going to step away and I'm going to take that moment. And suggesting that to each other. So and that can be painful as an adult to go, hey, do you need to take some space for a moment? Mm-hmm. I say this with love, but do you need to step away? It seems like you're having I'm not trying to shame your emotions or anything like that, but do you need to breathe for a minute? Do you need to step aside? And then can we talk about what's going on? Not don't feel what you're feeling. I'm not trying to say shut down, but we are in a very confined small space. We live in a small house, but even if you don't, when you're sharing a space with someone, just being really conscious of what your feelings are doing, what your behavior around your feelings, and know that we all know it's there, whether you're pretending that it isn't.
Right.
Or yeah, right. Like you can't really hide that, especially when you have kids. The kids know, they're tuned in on a level that as adults we are kind of trained to ignore, but they haven't done that yet. So that's, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's helpful to try, and this is hard, but to try and be aware of and take responsibility for your own behavior around your emotions, what you're putting out there, and offer awareness to your companions in a way that isn't like pointing fingers or judging.
Mm-hmm.
So easier said than done.
Yes. Yes. But well said nonetheless. I mean, just being aware of what your state is doing to the atmosphere of your house is a big first step towards being able to have that influence not be a negative one. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's the best you can do, is to be not negative rather than to be positive. And that's okay. That's all right. If that's all that you're able to accomplish, then hopefully other people in your household will be able to actually contribute something that's more light and humorous and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like, and one of the things that can contribute to a more self-caring household are the seasonal observances that we do.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think that pagans were strange in that they got such satisfaction out of these, you know, ritual things around the course of the year. And what I find is that everybody loves them.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody really loves observing the seasons and having a holiday and having it be meaningful and special. And of course, I don't mean everybody. There's 7 billion people on the planet, but many, many, many people get real satisfaction out of those kinds of practices. And so as a holiday begins to roll around, to decorate the house and plan some activities and get out the music for that time of year and all that kind of thing, all of that is just really great for helping people to feel like the hearth of the home is lit.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's life there.
Hmm. So the connections while observing the seasons, is that what you're getting at a little bit?
Well, yes. I think that one thing that we can do to contribute to the well-being of our households is to help arrange for those seasonal activities. Mm-hmm. For the preparation for them, and then actually to kind of help organize those, hopefully with the help of others in the household. But mm-hmm. sometimes it just falls to us to do it on our own, depending on what our circumstances are.
Sure. Yeah. Hmm.
Anything else you can think of that's good for the household?
Hmm. Well, this is one that I think it's just knowing the people in your household, and knowing that different people are different, and the way that they express and the way they understand the world is different. And sometimes people talk about love language,
right,
and that people have different love languages, how they express and how they interpret actions, and just keeping that in mind in terms of, you know, does it help your partner to hear you say I love you? Mm-hmm. Or maybe they like that, but maybe it means a lot more to them to give them a hug or put your hand on their shoulder, or, you know, that physical touch, or the doing, or the, you know, just
or,
being,
or wash the dishes.
Wash, yes. Always wash the dishes. Right. When in doubt. Yeah. Mm. So that kind of thing. I think the awareness and thoughtfulness, the presence.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I really agree. So do we want to talk about communities now?
I think so, yeah. So we've said the individual, and then our households or immediate surroundings that in this time period are people that we can be physically present with. But maybe when we go into community right now, this is a time period where we still have a connection, but may not be able to be in person with them.
Right.
So how do we care for our communities, how do we care for each other when we can't go over and give them the hug or be in person to do the ritual with them, or, you know.
Right. Yeah. And it seems that at times like these, the most important part of that is just to remind people that you think of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just simply that, to make sure that there's an opportunity to let people know that they matter to you, and that even though you can't see them physically, you're still thinking about them and you still consider them to be a part of your circle of friends. One of the things that I really encourage people to do at the community level in the way of self-care is not to wait for somebody else to initiate some kind of contact.
Mm-hmm.
Be a convener, you know, pick a list of, you know, a circle of your friends who know one another and set up a Zoom call and just hang out. Doesn't have to be any particular occasion, and you don't have to say that you're going to do it every month. You know, none of that is necessary. It can be a one-off thing, but you just do it because you care about people and you want them to know.
Yeah. And right now, I think a lot of people are really, really lonely.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's something that our culture has struggled with anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's very profound. And it's so funny because we're so connected in with the world on some levels, but so deeply alone and disconnected at the same time.
Yes. Yes. I know I feel it. I definitely feel it. I mean, I have very dear friends and I haven't gotten to see them for 8 months and I miss them. I miss them a lot. But that doesn't mean that I can't take the lead in connecting with them as much as possible under the circumstances, even if we can't get together in a physical space.
Yeah. I know for me, sometimes just receiving that little nudge that, hey, how are you? Or here's a picture of a kitten. you know, those... It makes a difference, right? It really does, even when we can't get together in person. And to what you were saying about making the connections and just going ahead and scheduling that Zoom hangout or whatever it is, I think that it's often really appreciated because we get so wrapped up in everything that's going on. We forget, and then for folks who have a lot of social anxiety, this whole situation does not make that any better. Mm-mm. And there's the background doubt of, well, do they really want to see me? Do they really want it? Nobody's inviting me, you know? And so when you do reach out and invite that person, there's an opportunity for a connection there. Even if it's not the same connection that we would have in person, it still really, really matters.
Absolutely. For sure it does.
Right.
It is remarkable how little it takes, honestly, to help people to feel affirmed and seen and valued. But if that little bit doesn't happen, then they don't. So it's really important. It's on all of us right now to be more proactive. You know, it's one thing to have a life where you know you're going to see your friends like once a quarter or something because somebody will throw a party.
Mm-hmm.
That's all very passive and all you have to do is go. These times demand a little bit more proactivity from us.
Yeah.
We have to make it happen ourselves. And everybody who you invite on that Zoom call will feel terrific that they were invited, whether they're able to make it or not. They'll feel great just that they were invited because somebody cared about them.
Yeah. And also, if you happen to have people's physical addresses, there is a fun, you can, it might sound cheesy, but sending somebody a card. Or if you have children, have your children draw all over the card and then send it. And that gets good points every time. But something, you know, just, I received a letter from my brother in the mail yesterday, right? And we talk on the phone and we text and things, but out of the blue, there was a little letter and it was just, you know, it was just a, oh, wow. And our generation would never have sent letters if it wasn't for all the shutdowns.
Right.
You know, but it was nice. It really felt good. And it reminded me that there are a lot of people in my life that could get some letters right now, or just some pictures, or, you know, mm-hmm. anything.
Sure. Yeah. I got a card from a member of the board of directors of the organization I work for, last week. Just a really sweet card saying how much they appreciated my work and everything that I bring to the job, and that they're really lucky to have me. And wow, you know, there's my day made. Doesn't take very much, but it was wonderful to get something like that. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like we're in pretty strong agreement that right now, just that reaching out and making the connections, even if they're not the same type of connection that we might have at one point done, that what the connection that you can make still really matters, and maybe more now than before even.
Yes. I agree that I think that it's even more important than previously. The people that I really feel for are the people who are, well, there's a couple of categories. There's the people that are super tactile, for mm-hmm. whom, you know, for whom physical contact is really the way that they internalize affection from people. And if they don't get that, then they just feel this hunger. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard. And then, you know, all of my various friends who are polyamorous, who have these multiple relationships, and now they're just hunkered down in a house with one person in most cases. And some of them are having a really hard time because there are people that they love very deeply that they haven't been able to see for 3/4 of a year.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, there are lives in the balance. There's a pandemic going on and nobody wants to get anybody sick. So people are by and large being responsible.
Yeah.
So that's another, maybe rarer, but still I really, my heart goes out to those folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, are there any other self-care, community, household care kind of things or rituals that you wanted to share with folks?
Eggnog.
Oh my goodness, yes.
I'm a big believer in eggnog. This is the time of year, and usually we have a rule that we won't get any until after Thanksgiving, but I've already broken that rule this year. 2020 gets a special dispensation.
So. Yes. All the eggnog.
Yes.
We're a pumpkin household too. It's pumpkin everything. Eggnog, pumpkin. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maybe go ahead. Let yourself go a little bit more all out on the decorations and the treasured holiday foods and
the comfort food for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, people talk about having gained weight during COVID and all that kind of stuff. Well, yes. Okay. That happens. You can lose it later.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're really gaining debilitating amounts of weight, don't sweat it so much. You know, just do what you have to do in order to get through this time.
Yeah. I mean, do the things that are going to make you feel good. And there's a balance there, right?
Yes.
There's definitely a balance, but giving ourselves that room and that, you know, it's a term that comes from Christianity, but I like it, is the giving yourself a little grace.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that that's.
Yeah. Boy, we could probably do half an episode just on talking about that word.
That word has a lot. Yeah, it has a lot of meanings in different ways.
It does.
But and I'm certainly not doing the you need forgiveness for your inherited sin of sex right. and all of that. Not right. coming at it from that direction.
Understood. Understood. Yeah. But there is something about giving yourself dispensation from inner criticism and just letting something be enjoyed. One of the saddest things I think about humans generally is that they can do something that they love and be racked with shame about it at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they don't get to have the joy out of the thing that they love. Yeah. It's much better just to enjoy it because yeah. it makes you happy. The shame isn't doing anybody any good.
Yeah. When it's something that is good for you and helpful and.
Yeah, but even then the shame doesn't help. I think, you know.
Well, I think the shame is there to prevent you from, you know, murdering somebody or, you know, stealing and that kind of thing that on a social level, right? That's what the shame is there for. But the shame on feeling good or the shame on eating the thing or the guilt that racks up, I don't think that that's healthy. I don't think that helps us on a personal level or on a communal level.
Nope. Nope. It just spreads misery around.
Yeah.
And it tees up moral condemnation by others who claim moral superiority, mm-hmm. which is what we see throughout Christianity and Islam particularly. Mm-hmm. And conservative branches of Judaism as well. You know, you're bad because you do the thing or you don't do the thing or you do the thing the wrong way. And I'm better because I do the thing the right way.
And who gets to decide that?
Right. Yeah. Oh, well, it's in the book. Well, but what chapter of the book?
Whose interpretation?
Exactly. So yeah. I'm awfully glad in the world of non-theist paganism that we don't have to play that particular game. Although there is still that absorbed overculture, which still tends to lead to some people in the pagan community, you know, being on a soapbox and, you know, you're bad because, or you're not a real pagan because, or you're somehow deficient because something.
Yeah.
Doesn't really help. As long as people aren't being hurt. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to say that, you know, a neo-Nazi is not embracing any kind of true pagan values. I'll stand on that soapbox. But yeah. But when it comes to, you know, occasionally eating a half a pint of ice cream, I'm not yeah. give anybody any grief.
That's your thing. Eat that ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah.
And eggnog. That's how we got on this. Was cheers with the eggnog.
Yep. Yes. So at every level, eggnog for you, eggnog for your household, eggnog for your community.
Yes. Well, I actually have some eggnog and I think I'm going to go drink some of that.
All right. So. I actually do too. And we've been talking about it. I'm definitely go getting some.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Yucca. It's been a pleasure as always.